Hello and welcome to the Leadership Learned podcast, brought to you by IDG, the Leadership Specialists. Each episode, we examine the behaviours, skills and attributes required to improve human performance through effective leadership. We discuss the latest thinking and issues affecting leadership from the boardroom to the classroom to provide you, whether you're a CEO, manager, graduate or student, with tangible insights to take away and use in your career and workplace as we go beyond the clichés to prove that leaders are made, not born. This week, we're talking about an attribute not commonly associated with leadership, kindness. It's a quality that, when put in a leadership context, can prove to be quite divisive. Some people see it as a weakness that undermines authority, and yet studies have shown that companies that value kindness have lower staff turnover and higher productivity. We're going to be discussing the recent research that has explored the benefits of kindness, how it relates to effective leadership, why it's more important than ever post-pandemic, and give you some tips on leading with kindness. So this week I'm joined by Nigel Girling and Rona McKenzie. Nigel, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, yes, I'm Nigel. I'm coming to the far end of a long career in leadership. I've been a CEO in several organisations over many years with varying degrees of success. And I've also been teaching and mentoring people in leadership for 30 years. And I'm head up the Professional Qualification School at IDG.
And Rona?
Yeah, my name's Rona. I spent 20 years working in education for the first part of my career and along the way studied postgrad qualifications in special needs, educational disadvantage and leadership, interestingly. I decided after 20 years to go and do something different. I was a head at the time, decided to go and do something different. Worked in luxury jewellery and cybersecurity since then and joined IDG late in 2021. With my focus on both on delivering to clients, but also particularly within the youth sector.
Great. So this week we're talking about something probably not commonly associated with the world of leadership, kindness. We recently had some research come into the office about the importance of this, and it's something that we really believe in. So Rona, could you take us through the research and what it means?
Yeah, absolutely. Our colleague Ian raised this with us, brought it to our attention a few months ago, and we've had a number of discussions about it since then. So in 2021, the summer of, the University of Sussex partnered with BBC Radio 4, and they wanted to deliver a piece of research which they called the Kindness Test. And this was a public science project. Their intention was to increase our understanding of the role that kindness plays in our lives. So they actually involved 60,000 people. Between the ages of 18 to 99, they say. I'm always curious to know if there was a 99-year-old involved. And they were across 144 different countries. And they were looking to see how we define kindness, where we saw kindness taking place, and if we'd noticed a difference in the last few years. So for the purpose of their research, they define kindness as being a quality of being generous, helpful, caring about other people, but importantly, without seeking any praise or any reward for that.
Okay. And what did they find?
They felt that most of the respondents thought that kindness had kind of either remained the same or declined during their lifetime, however long that lifetime was. But 2/3 of people, interestingly, thought that the pandemic had made people kinder because, of course, we'd seen acts of kindness in communities, in families, and often with complete strangers. So they were feeling that the pandemic had made us kinder. Predominantly, it was that was kindness was appearing within their friendship groups or their close family members, and they were seeing that level of kindness all of the time or nearly all the time. And so the kind of places we would find kindness being played out was in the home or in medical settings, communities, at work, interestingly in green spaces and shops. But the least likely places were on the internet, on public transport and out in the streets. And I think that's more where they weren't in their own communities, but they were out in streets in other communities. So that we were seeing typical places where people were being kind, typical types of people in relation to us who were being kinder. But one thing that struck Nigel and I was that 73% of people said that kindness was really valued in their place of work, and that those that received or felt or saw kindness taking place reported much higher levels of well-being. So interesting in looking at our personality types, you know, depending on how much we engage with others that we know or don't know, might impact on our well-being, you know, in that roundabout way. And one that struck me was the one that I'll just mention. People that talked to strangers saw and received more kindness. And Nigel knows that my partner's Canadian and is the cheeriest, friendliest chap in the world, you know, like a human Labrador. And his impact on my life, because he talks to everybody and anybody, means that he does both give and receive more acts of kindness. So I felt like that part of the research really correlated. But for our discussions, we were really interested in 73% of people saying kindness is valued at work and wondering what that might look like.
Yeah.
So why do you think that then relates to kindness being an important leadership trait?
The interesting thing here is that this goes to the heart of what being a leader is about. You know, for a lot of people in leadership who come from, let's say, a technical or transactional background or an operational background, they often think their job is about getting things done. And clearly there's some truth in that, because that is why we're all here in the end, working in an organization. But sometimes there's not the correct balance, I think, between getting things done and valuing the people that are getting the things done. And I've been ranting on about this for 30 odd years, and amongst other things. And one of the things that strikes me about this is that kindness is about valuing people. If you don't value people and what they bring and what they are capable of, it's pretty near impossible to be kind authentically. I've seen leaders in workplaces who've read about this and thought, oh yeah, I should do this compassion thing. So they'll ask somebody how they are, but you can see very clearly in their eyes, they really, to the heart of the soul, don't give a toss what the answer is. And that's a challenge for us. You know, so going back to Rona's comment about personality types, you've got to be the sort of person who cares how other people feel. And if you're not that person, then kindness really isn't for you, because you're going to have to fake it. And so kindness is important in leadership, because it demonstrates both mentally, cerebrally, psychologically, and in practice, how much we care about how other people feel and what they're capable of and the impact we have on them.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we talk about in relationships, whether, you know, personal relationships, that fostering a sense of connection with someone and maintaining that connection is around caring about them, knowing about them, giving them our time and our attention, being present and being in the moment. And so if we devote that much genuine, authentic behavior to a close relationship in our profession, in our personal lives, it makes sense that in our professional lives, the same qualities and the same attributes, the same attention are required to create genuine relationships at work. And given that we spend as much, if not more, time work with the people we work with, that level of connection is really important. And in the hurry-upness of life, and particularly in the workplace, the constant targets, constant activity and things to be achieving, the people get left behind in favor of the tick list and the you know, the sense of achievement of another win of a client or whatever it might be. And so then people get left behind. And then when we leave people behind, we lose people, because they don't feel like they're part of the journey and they're not valued, they're not valuable. And so they're off. So I think what's interesting, what Nigel's saying there, is around that authenticity. If you're having to work at that, it's like trying to write with your left hand when you're right-handed. It doesn't come naturally. It's a bit messy. It's quite difficult to read, and it's awkward. And it takes a lot of practice. Clearly from the research, lots of people are kind, and kindness does come easily. But why is it not translating into work when it's obviously translating so much more outside of work?
Yeah, I mean, being slightly provocative, which I know I don't normally do, I wonder what proportion of the leadership community are in the other 27%.
Yeah, good point.
And I suspect quite a lot is the answer. Yeah. You know, kindness is something that a lot of people value, I think partly because they don't see much of it or get much of it. So they value it because it's aspirational. You know, you work in organizations where there is a culture of humanity, and they do, you know, they do exist. They're in very short supply, but they do exist. You see how it affects the way people show up. You know, their expectations of what's going to happen to them that day are completely different to when you have toxic leadership that is driven by numbers. So, yeah, I think it's interesting. If we could do that pie chart, I suspect we might find that quite a substantial proportion of the 27% were in senior roles, because we've valued that for years, haven't we? We've promoted people
almost because of their absence of compassion, because they're tough and dynamic and driven and hard and won't take no for an answer and good at knuckling people for their underperformance. So we value those qualities and characteristics. So it's not much of a surprise if we've ended up with a compassionless culture in our businesses.
When we posted some information, Matt, about this on LinkedIn to see what people's views were. And what was interesting was the polarizing nature of the word kindness, because actually what it did was it made people drop into one of two camps. Mm. Either it's a great word and its meaning is powerful and kindness matters, and I actively promote or try to promote kindness in my life. And the other people who said kindness is pink and fluffy and there is no place for kindness using that term in leadership, in business. And they were happy to change the word kindness to compassion. But when we think that we can be compassionate by just thinking about it rather than doing something, actually compassionate feels like a really watered down version of kindness. It feels like the preamble, the thinking part of before the doing, the being kind is the next step. But I also noticed that predominantly, and this is a small sample size and, you know, not generalized to the leadership population, but it's predominantly men who felt more uncomfortable with the term kindness than women. There were some men who said, yes, completely understand the importance of and I believe that I display kindness in my leadership approach. But others were very uncomfortable and were quick to change the word to show us something that was acceptable to them. So that was interesting.
Yeah, and I suspect that perhaps does extrapolate to quite a proportion of the population. Because men, speaking for myself, as I used to be one, we are trained not to exhibit those characteristics. And those things are often by our fathers, and actually by our mothers as well, are kind of driven out of us at a young age. Mm. You know, stand up and be a man, man up, those kinds of things. Man up means be harder.
Mm.
You know, I'm not sure how helpful that is in a post-pandemic society where the last thing people need is for you to be harder.
And actually, when we look at mental health, particularly in men, and the talking about being honest about our feelings and our emotions, you know, and there is much more conversation now about how men are able to do that more so. I feel that the two are, you know, that's very linked. About being able to be genuinely, authentically you and share your feelings is such an important thing to do. And so actually I don't mind which word people choose to use, as long as their version of the word makes them feel comfortable and the meaning and what that looks like is right, for want of a better word.
It gives them the impetus to do the actions behind the word, I think. And I think I was going to say I expect that those sort of people that you were just talking about, Nigel, are their fingers are hovering near the pause, if not the delete button right now. And they're probably words such as fluffy, vague and woke are flying around their head. So what people who can't see maybe they can see the benefit in it, but for them, it's not their natural leadership style. How can they incorporate that into what they do?
For me, I think some of this comes from courage, which seems maybe possibly counterintuitive here, but having the guts and the bravery to do what you believe to be right, even if it's not popular. Mm-hmm. Now, that's usually used, I find, with leaders in the opposite sense, in that it's trying, if somebody's saying, I remember a CEO I worked for once saying, I'm not here to be popular, and having a long conversation with them afterwards saying, I think you might find that actually you are. You know, how much engagement are you going to get? But people usually say, I'm not here to be popular, just before they do something absolutely horrible and toxic. So they're justifying it to themselves as being okay. So I think some of this is about having the courage to go, actually, I know it's not the way we are in our organization, but it's the way I am. It's the way I want it to be. And I'm prepared to stand up for that.
When I worked in schools, you would, in my early career, and you know, going back 25 years ago, you were told to, you know, don't smile before Christmas, be mean.
Don't smile before Christmas. Was that a real thing?
Yeah.
That was September, don't smile before Christmas. Yeah. I'm useless for the first 10 minutes. But actually what I learned over time was it was about being fair. So there's a place for kindness everywhere. And it was just about being fair. If you had to set a standard or an expectation, there was a reason for it. And there was a good reason. And it was a fair one. And if a student needed to be advised on behaving in a different way, for an example, there was a good reason for it. And giving them the background as to why that was the case was the most important part. But all along the way, you could be kind and you could be friendly and be supportive and all of those things that, you know, the qualities that make being somewhere day in, day out as a young person a great place to be. No one wants to work, you know, they're going to work every day as young as kids in school. So they want to be surrounded by people that care about them and are kind and excite them in the learning. And that's where the courage to actually say to yourself, I can be kind to these young people and be firm and be fair and have a really positive experience. And they will do well in my lessons and in my school and in their lives. So important. And I think if you decide what your term is and you decide what it means to you and how it resonates with you, so it feels genuine and authentic when you behave in that way every day, I think that really matters. And if it doesn't feel comfortable, you know, when you're doing something and it feels a bit clunky, you know, why is that? Interrogating what that means. And that normally means talking to someone else about it. You can't typically do that on your own, but getting people to give you some feedback, what that looks like. Does it feel authentic? You know, we know of the people that don't behave in these ways, and when they do, everyone sits back and says, crikey, what's wrong with him today?
Yeah.
So people need feedback. No one knows how they are unless they get feedback. So having the courage to give others feedback as much as get it for yourself, I think is really important.
And I get that. I've always felt that. And if our job is as leaders of people is to care for them and get the best out of them, help them to be the best version of themselves, why wouldn't kindness be part of that?
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we talked a lot about psychological safety. And in order to perform at your best, you need to feel safe in your working environment. Use work as the example. But if the behaviours of others are unpredictable or are not genuine, and you don't know what's okay and acceptable to be, you're trying to be someone else, you can't possibly feel safe and you can't then give of your best. So it seems to make sense that being human, being real, and that means making mistakes and owning up when you do and learning from experiences and growing as a team so that the team feel like it's like when it's good, it's great. And when it goes wrong, we take accountability for it. I used to say to students, we'll all make mistakes. What we're aiming to do is not make them twice. That will be good. And that was my mantra. We will. Careless mistakes are careless and we need to avoid those. But mistakes are inevitable in life and they're learning opportunities. It's not a failure. It's just some feedback. Let's take the feedback and do something differently. And celebrating it, I think noticing it in other people. So the research says that if we see kindness of others, it impacts on us. We know that when we're driving, someone lets you pull out. It's guaranteed the next time someone wants to pull out, you let them too. You feel dead good about yourself, pat yourself on the back, go me, I'm so kind. And so it is infectious and it does multiply. And if you're working in a place where that kindness is just part of everyday life, it does build and then it feels like it's just part of life. As Nigel was saying earlier, they're the workplaces where you want to be because it feels nice to be there.
I think it's important in that context to say that what it isn't, what kindness isn't in this context, and it's not being, you know, overbearing. It's not this the whole cliche, the whole thing with millennials being, you know, they spend too much money on their snowflakes. That's the word I was looking for. Snowflakes and all that rubbish. And it's not about that. It's not about being overcompensating to people. But it's as the words that you both of you have used, it's about being authentic and about being reasonable. And I think with the in the post-pandemic world, it's very obvious that well-being is a very, very important part of business life now, not just everyday life, and that kindness can fit in really well in terms of that.
We always say that the best leaders know themselves and they know their people. They know themselves really well, so they know how they show up every day. They know what it's like to be led by them, to have them in their team, you know, in your team. And so they are connected to the people connected to the people they work with. Our lives stopped for a year and we were in one room, one building. Everything felt different. Now we've got a chance to try again. So when I show up at work, if I don't feel connected and I don't feel like this is a place that is my tribe, my place to be, I don't want to be here. And I think that's why so many people left their jobs, because they suddenly realized in the jigsaw puzzle of their life or the jigsaw puzzle of work, their piece didn't fit and it needed to go and fit somewhere else. And so by creating authentic, connected workplaces where people feel like they're developing relationships and they're part of a tribe and it makes sense to them in their lives, that's where they're meant to be.
Yeah, and I think what you're referring to there is what they're calling the Great Resignation, isn't it? And they're talking about a lot of people have changed their jobs in the last couple of years as a result of the pandemic, putting everything into greater perspective. And a lot of them would think, you know, why would I bother working for someone who doesn't, as a minimum, act as a decent human being? Yeah. So I want to change tack slightly. One thing I wanted to talk about is how this impacts on behaviour and capability development. Nigel?
One thing that came up in my mind when Rona was talking about some of those things is the idea of vulnerability. You know, for a lot of leaders, I actually think men and women, but for different reasons, being honest about how you feel and being vulnerable and prepared to admit to your weaknesses and fears and concerns is too dangerous because you're expected to somehow be impervious to all of that. So, you know, for a lot of people, their well-being is a lie, is based on a lie, is based on role play. And therefore, you get situations where I've encountered it many times, and I've looked at it in the mirror on occasions. The way somebody looks and talks and behaves does not reflect their inner monologue. Yeah. And that's something entirely different. And that could be really unhelpful to them and the people around them. So, you know, the willingness to be open about how you feel goes back to something Rona said earlier on about this whole business with men not talking, you know, the suicide being the single biggest cause of male death under the age of 55, which is frankly terrifying as a statistic.
Yeah, it is.
I've got friends who, two of them are ex-rugby league internationals, and their work consists of going around to very macho, male-dominated workplaces and encouraging men to talk about how they feel, because both of them got to the edge of suicide and were saved by circumstance, an accident.
Wow.
So for them, what they're helping people to do, going back to your question really, is that what they're helping people to do is to add a capability to their toolbox, that capability to be open and honest and vulnerable with their colleagues.
I think that the vulnerability part's so important. So as a new head teacher, and I was, 37, I'd been given the opportunity to build a school from scratch. So great honour, and I had 12 months to do it. I'd never been a head before. I'd only been a deputy, and it was real baptism by fire, and it was hard work, but I felt like I had to know what to do, and I had to show up every day and have the answers even when I didn't. And I at that time was very proud of myself, always finding the answers and making it look like it was all going to be fine, and always telling my board everything was going to be fine, always, you know. And actually that was a front for what was going on behind, you know, like the proverbial swan kicking under the water. Or, crikey, my legs were going like the absolute clappers. And actually to my detriment, because I really suffered from that. And it wasn't till a colleague of mine, who since became a very good friend, who said to me, I did something wrong one day, and she said, oh, thank goodness for that. I needed you to get something wrong, because the image of perfection is not helpful for everybody else, because now we think that's how we have to be. And equally, you just asked for some help, and we've been dying to lend a hand in the last few months because it's got so tricky, and I was taking it all on my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And so that vulnerability is so, for particularly, I think, for leaders who have that sense of, I need to lead by example, and I need to be the one that shows up every day and gets it right, inverted commas. Mm.
What are the things that are stopping us from being kind at work? What do we need to talk about there?
So there are, in the workplace, I think, knowing what kindness means to you, what it means to other people. So if we think about love languages, I don't know if you've ever come across those, but it's how people like to receive their love and affection from a partner. Some people like gifts, some acts of service, some kind of physical affection. And if you reward, if you behave in a way to a partner who has a different love language to you, you can get it all wrong. So in our house, if my partner does the hoovering, I think like it's the best thing ever. If he bought me a present, I'm not really bothered. Okay. Now, so if you know that really early on, don't buy me anything. just Hoover, the world is good. And I think it's, if you take that into the workplace and we think about kindness, you might make a cup of tea or do something for someone and think you're being kind, and it might not land in the way you intend in their world. So knowing how kindness shows up for other people, I think, is really important. And then, of course, it's about knowing how it's going to be interpreted. So by knowing how it shows up for them and how, what meaning they attach to it, will help you to know that it won't be misinterpreted by them. Because lots of people aren't kind because they're not sure. You know, someone holds a door open for someone else, and now is that kindness, or is that, you know, I'm a woman, I can open my own door, thanks very much. Yep. So people get a bit uncomfortable avoiding using the shortcuts that technology can create as a way of not genuinely connecting with people. There's a time and a place for emails and Zoom calls and all those other things, but the human connection part of being together is so important.
When it becomes normal to be open and honest and have good conversations with people, one of the big barriers is removed, because it's just the way we do things around here. So when people come in who are new, that's the culture they get absorbed into, even if they've come from a very different one. But you've got to create that norm, and that takes ages and a lot of diligent effort. And often when you've got senior leaders in post in some organizations who don't see the value in making that effort, who's going to start? Who's going to be the first one?
We see teams in organizations where they've absolutely nailed it, and that team really is supportive and connected, but then that team in the bigger picture of the main business might not be so, and that all that great work they're doing there is eroded by senior leaders who aren't behaving in the same way. What does it look like when you're in the business? My partner went for an interview, and I said to him, just go and wander around for a couple of hours, talk to people randomly, see what they look like and feel like, and how stressed are they, how happy are they, how much time have they got to give you? Or are they in a hurry? They haven't got time for you because there's too much going on. Yeah. And just soak up that, you know, that sense you get in your heart when you wander around somewhere. In teaching, we call it taking the temperature. So as a head teacher, you wander the corridors in the classrooms to feel what the temperature is, and you can tell when something's not right. Mm-hmm. You don't, no one needs to say a word. And I think that in workplaces, when you land in there, you know either you fit and it feels all right for you, or there's a warning sign that something's wrong, and you've got to have your spidey senses on to notice, because we in sales we call it happy ears. We're convinced everyone's buying from us in sales because I've got my happy ears on. And it's the same when we walk around in workplaces. You know, turn your senses up and notice what's really happening rather than what you'd like to see and feel.
Yeah, absolutely. Delusion is a critical aspect of all of this, that you've got to work out where your delusions are and dial them down. I remember doing a consultancy project years ago now with a well-known organization, and they spent the first day we were working with them telling me how fantastic their company was and how much everyone loved it. And so the following day, my colleague and I went in there with this, tell how long ago it was, a video recorder, a camera, and we went in there and just filmed what was going on in their open plan offices. You've never seen a more dispirited bunch of people outside of a prisoner of war camp. You know, they looked like they were being held at gunpoint and their first ball was as a hostage. And so the following day, I went in there and I opened our conversation with the senior leaders by showing them this video, and they sacked us.
Wow.
And I thought that was very interesting. Well, it was very expensive too, from my point of view, but clearly that was not acceptable to them to have their delusions so cruelly exposed to them, and more importantly, to the others. So I think it goes back to the point about bravery again, doesn't it? Who's going to have the courage to lift the veil and not just lift it and put it back down again, but lift it and keep it up and go, okay, well, we say this, but here's this and here's that. And what do you think that means? And what's it got to do with us?
Yeah, and I think you both talk about culture a lot there. So, I mean, obviously, as we always come back to, it's all about being top down with these sort of things and making sure that it's something that permeates throughout the organization and isn't just something that people do in their own little silos. Okay, so let's wrap it all up now by saying, you know, what are your sort of top tips, your top three or four things that can help people become more comfortable showing kindness when leading others at work?
Yeah, I think first of all, knowing what kindness means to you. So pick your term, whatever you want it to be, and define it. So if it's compassionate or kindness or whatever, helpful, name your term, know what it means, and then get to understand, share that with other people and understand what their version of the same word is and how does kindness look to them, so that whatever you're doing isn't a bolt from the blue or a surprise or landing in an unfortunate way. Actually, your kind acts are being received in the way that you intended. I think also noticing kindness in others and calling it out, sharing it publicly, so it becomes not just about you, but then about what other people are doing. Because the minute you spot it and you celebrate it, it is infectious. It's like the yawns.
I think we've had quite enough of infections now, haven't we? I don't think we want to get more of that.
I think for me, the one word that other than kindness that I took out of it was was courage. What you said, Nigel, about having the courage to be kind, and that's what, because that's what it takes a lot of the time.
So I think we'll wrap it up there. Thanks for your contributions today, Nigel and Rona. And thank you, listener, for joining us today. We hope you found that interesting and useful. If you'd like to know more about this topic, then Rona has written an article on it, which she's published on LinkedIn. So if you search for Dr. Rona McKenzie on LinkedIn, you should be able to find it on there. Thank you for listening to the Leadership Learned podcast. We hope you found it interesting and useful. And if you have, then please do subscribe and join us next time. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the topics and issues discussed today. You can find us on LinkedIn by searching Inspirational Development Group or email us at info@inspirationaldg.com. If you want to find out more about IDG and the work we do, optimizing human performance through leadership development, you can visit our website at inspirationaldevelopment.com. We'll see you next time.